You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Thursday, January 11th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Well, we're going to get into the NFL divisional round playoff previews, talk about that. Want to spend some time updating some things, obviously, on the coaching search world in the NFL. A couple of things in college football. But want to spend a little time on the NFL advisory board, and what that is about as these players are declaring for the draft now. Also answer a question that was sent in. And by the way, you can ask a question and send it in. Go to LandryFootball.com and hit contact Chris. Send us an email. I'll address it here on a future podcast. We'll fit it in there. Make sure that we get it answered for you. This question is about, when we are looking at film as scouts and as opposed to looking at some things outside of the film to make a determination on a player. We've got some, obviously, four interesting NFL games this weekend. Everyone is still talking feverishly about the finish in the national championship game, and just kind of put a capper on that. You know, it's sometimes a chance to overreact to situations, and we're a prisoner of the moment. But when you really look at the ebb and flow of the end of this football season, how impressive it was with the Rose Bowl and the national championship game, ending kind of the way they did in both in overtime, the excitement level from a fan standpoint was through the roof. But, you know, I think it also showed a couple of things that in the championship game, you have, I think, not only the two best programs in the SEC, but perhaps two of the three, four best programs in the country now. Now, Georgia hadn't been there consistently as much or as long as Clemson had. So I'm not trying to give them as much credit. I would put Clemson ahead of them. But I'm anticipating here, which is always dangerous, but watching and seeing this and being involved in this long enough, I can sense that what Georgia's got going on is the real deal. It doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs every year. As it is, going through the SEC is going to be tough. And it's going to be tougher for Alabama going forward, quite frankly. You hadn't had a contender in the East. And the West has fallen off a little bit. And I know Auburn beat them, and Auburn is good to beat them a couple of years. LSU is gradually declining even more and more and becoming less and less of a factor, and I think that's going to continue. Texas A&M is going to be on an uptick, but it's going to take a little while for them to get to that point. I don't see Arkansas getting, I think Arkansas can be what Ole Miss was in potentially giving Alabama some trouble offensively, but not sustainable. Mississippi State will certainly miss Dan Mullen, but will be good, but won't be the threat. It will be a threat in terms of winning games. But I guess what I'm saying is that the conference is going to get better. Tennessee's a long way away. Florida's going to get better. So the East is going to be more challenging for Alabama in their conference championship games, as I expect them, Alabama, to continue to win the West. They didn't do it this year. I'm aware of that. Auburn is really the one team that is potentially dangerous. But when you look at what has happened and what makes an Alabama and a Georgia different and from the others is the program. Everyone focuses on, we need this hot coordinator. No, what you need to win championships is great vision as a head coach. Somebody that knows how to develop and put together a championship program. Yeah, there are people that were on staffs of championship programs that really didn't have as much say-so or much to do with the success as maybe some people might think, particularly when those guys ascend to get jobs. People tend to want to say things regarding, well, this guy saw it here, he was a part of that there. Well, a lot of people are a part of it. Who's really responsible and who really is bright enough to take those qualities and do it on their own. Not everybody can. Kirby Smart certainly can. Kirby Smart certainly has. You're not going to see everybody do that just as well. Jim McElwain was not able to do it as well at Florida. Kirby Smart has. Well, why is that? Well, there's a vision, there's a plan, but there's a commitment from an administration to do things from a support staff that makes your staff better, to makes them elite, to give them an edge in recruiting, to give them an edge in development, to give them an edge in preparation, to give them an edge in schematics. All the things that I'm seeing with Georgia. And I say this because I think as we kind of look towards the off-season programs in college football, it's not just about recruiting. It's about the player development, and it's about the staff development, and it's about the growth of the program. And so as you begin to look, put the season behind you, look ahead to spring practice, look ahead towards next season, keep that in mind, that there's a lot more to it. And we'll talk more about it as the days and weeks come along and we get into some of the off-season college football conversation. Want to talk, though, about the NFL Advisory Board and the role, and having been a part of it, there's a little bit of a misnomer of kind of what takes place, and I want to make sure that people understand what actually does happen. The NFL Advisory Board, we put that together so that players had a vehicle to go to get a feel for where they're ranked, where they may go in the draft as an underclassman. We live in an information age, or as I like to say, a misinformation age, where there's a whole lot of misinformation. Folks, there right now the count is 97 underclassmen that have declared. And everyone has a right to come out early. It's their personal decision. But what my mission has always been on the staff, on the advisory board, and in dealing with a lot of these coaches about their players in college, is to give them the best information. The problem is, we're going to have 150 kids that are told they're first rounders. I mean, common sense, folks. There's 18 to 25 first round grades every year on an average, which means there's going to be, do the numbers, a dozen or so, give or take, that are second round grade players that will bleed into the first round. Getting players to understand where they're graded is one thing. Telling them what round they're going to go in is very fluid. For example, as I said, 18 to 24, 25 first round grades, try on about 45 to 52 second round grades. Do the math. There are more second round graded players than there are spots in the second round. The opposite of the first round. So now you got, just because you get a second round grade, folks, that means you may go in the middle of the third round. Not everybody with a second round grade is going in the first round. Some of them is going in the first round. Some of them is going middle, all the way middle to late third round. Numbers, folks. And then third round, got about 65 guys with third round grades. There are only 32 third round picks. There's double the amount of players with third-round grades than there are spots in the third round. Well, you shouldn't have that many third-round grades. No, folks, we don't grade players. I think we have, in this fantasy football world that we live in, people just look at mock drafts, and that's what their view of scouting is and the draft is. Well, the draft is about evaluating, and it's about going through a number of critical factors, and we're going to get into this as we get into the draft season, for each position, and grading them to a standard. Then once you grade them all, then you stack them. Which one do you like the best? And we'll get into how we separate the ones with tied grades. One thing to understand is that just because you're given a third round grade, which for example is a guy that has a chance to make and contribute. Okay, so on the scale that I've worked with for over 30 years, 5.9 would be a numerical grade that would put a player in that chance to make, which is in the third round. There'll be about 60 of those guys that I'll have this year in a given year in average. Well, it's common sense they're not all going to go there. So what I always tell a player in an advisory board discussion with these players is, be prepared for the worst case scenario. Do not come out thinking you're got a third round grade, I'm going to be taken in a third round. Be prepared that it might be the top of the sixth round before you get picked. Be prepared for that and be acceptant of that. Because if you're not, well, then come back, and that is the genesis of your decision. Come back and improve your draft stock, hopefully. And then maybe you'll get that, maybe a first round grade, second round grade, then you're likely going to go higher. Because if you're counting on the best case scenario, you're going to often be disappointed. Now, there's some variables to this. If you're a pass rusher that's got some skills but don't have the production, there's some things that necessitate you being a third round grade, but you've got some ability there. Quarterback, your chances are going to be good, better than the running back, the receiver, the linebacker. Okay, and we'll get into that more too. So we all discuss that with them, but we try to give them a range. What we don't want them to do is to listen to the Kuiper guys and the other guys that are on TV that have never scouted, that are just throwing stuff out. Those things are not relevant. They are not the people that are going to be drafting you, putting grades on you, and are determining where you're going to get graded. And, you know, we have too much of this where players believe what they want to believe. They hear from NFL people that they're a fifth-round graded guy, but their Uncle Joe tells them, oh, you're better than that guy. You're a second-rounder. Okay, you want to believe what you want to believe. My pet peeve is that half of these guys in the 97, and we're going to have over 100 before the declaration date of the 15th, which is Monday, we're going to have so many of them that are not going to even get drafted. They will have left school. They will be out of school. They will have lost their scholarship. They may or may not even get invited to a camp. Won't make a team. Have nowhere to go to develop their football skills because their college career is over. Can't play pro football. They're not good enough. It's a problem. And it's one that really burns me up. I'm going to say further, but it's a travesty in our business. And I always say, I don't want to take our job too seriously, but in terms of the scope of the importance of society, because it's not, but I take my job seriously. And I wouldn't want anybody to get legal advice or medical advice from somebody in the neighborhood. I don't want them to get it from a doctor, a lawyer. It's one of the advisory boards there use it. Now, good coaches, I know, dealing with Nick Saban for years and years, he will take, in addition to the advisory board, and most coaches do this, it's just whether the kids listen. Myself, for example, I do work for over a dozen teams in the league. So I can give a coach access to where about a dozen teams, the grade range for all of their players. And then with contacts around the NFL, coaches will call others. And so they can sit down with their player and say, look, Jimmy, here's where you are. Here's where the range. They may not get into a lot of specifics about who likes you here or there. They don't want that getting out. But they'll say, look, this is the range. We got a couple of teams like you here or there. Most like you in this range. Give them a good vision. Look, if you want to be an NFL player and you want to come out early and you don't care where you get drafted, you don't care if you get drafted, that's fine. That's your choice. But I do have a problem when a kid thinks he's going to be a first rounder because some agent or an agent's runner tells him he is. And remember how agents do their job. Hey, Jimmy, you sign with me. No. That third, fourth round stuff. No. You're a second rounder, man. I trust me, I know. Sign with me. Well, of course, it's not going to be a second rounder. May not even get drafted. That guy doesn't know. But he's trying to get as many guys signed up because he doesn't know who's going to get drafted. So if he gets as many of them signed up as possible, it's like sales. Some of them may hit, and guess what? They got them locked up, and they'll get a piece of the contract. You know, but they have nothing to do, zero to do, and they lie to you if they tell you otherwise. Zero to do with where a guy's going to get drafted. But players are vulnerable. Players believe what they want to believe. This is why coaches, respectable coaches, have got to get their handle. Most of them do, but some don't get their handle around where a player's value is in the draft. And the player should always listen to his coach and trust his coach, that the coach is going to do right by him, the individual. Not tell him something to get him to come back, but to get him to do what's best for him as a player. Just know what the proper information is. And if you know that, make your decision Godspeed. Just do it with an educated body of information. Just something that is a good lesson for everyone. Advisory board is not the only way. You augment that with your own investigation through your coach that can find out that information from the people that will actually determine where you're going to get drafted, and then you go from there. Make your decision. Okay. Jeremiah writes, hey, Chris, what's the difference between guys like you and Nick Saban when watching film, and do you watch film slowed down or at a regular speed? Yeah, that's the first question. First of all, when you look at film, there are different ways you look at film. As a coach, you're looking at a number of things. If you're looking at your team, you're grading every player and every play. You're looking to see what they did from an assignment, an execution, a technique standpoint, and you're grading the player. You're also looking at what the play call was, what the responsibilities were, and did it get executed correctly. If it did get executed correctly or it did not get executed correctly, why? Did we put a guy in a position where he was not capable of handling, meaning he was overmatched? Did we not call the right play against that formation? That's what you're looking for there. You're also evaluating the skill set of the player while you're doing that. Yes, you watch the play over and over and over again. I laugh when there's things on the internet now with this, I think it's a Focus Football or something that comes out with instant grades after a game, tells you how a guy graded out. First of all, you're dealing with people that have never scouted or coached, don't know what they're looking at. A coach grades his position, and it takes him hours to go through a tape, grading every player on every play. Yet amateurs who don't know how to evaluate, players can do it in 20 minutes. Let that sink in and realize how ridiculous that is. You watch the tape over and over, the play over and over again. You have something what we call intercut. The tape that coaches use are intercut, and they're not all 22, and they're not end zone tight. They're a combination of both. So here's how it works. First play, you got the shot from the sideline wide where you see all 22. And you watch that play over and over again. You study, again, every player on every play, every situation, every formation, every movement. Then, after you're done with that play, you see the same play again from the end zone in what we call a tight line shot, where we see the line in a tight formation set. That way we can see line play better and evaluate footwork and evaluate hand usage better. Tough to do that from the wide shot. can't look at the secondary play from the tight line side. So you have to look at both. So you look at the play over and over again. Yes, you slow it down. You know, you look, depending on what you're trying to uncover, you will sometimes, looking at footwork, you'll slow it down and you'll see footwork. You'll see hand placement. Yes, you absolutely do it at regular speed and at slow down speed, both. He then asks, is there anything you look for outside of football to determine a player like the Colts did with Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf with an interview or even the school that he played at? Well, very simply, and I've discussed this in the past, the biggest part of the evaluation process is the film, but equally as important, although it doesn't take as much time in some ways to get the information, but it takes a lot of time to uncover the true information, is to look at a guy's personal background, his character. Go into a school, you spend time with the position coach, the coordinator, the head coach, the trainer, the assistant trainer, the equipment guy, the academic advisor. Over the years, when you go into a school, you develop contacts. You develop people that you know that will shoot you straight and will tell you about the player. First of all, you have to look at his actions. Get around him, see how he acts and interacts. Players, if they know you're there, they can put on a front. You talk to them, they can give you a line. They're all trained. You can't train your life's work and your life's habits. You study those, you learn them, you go back to the high school, learn about what the player was like there. Kids make mistakes. You don't worry about a kid being immature. You don't worry about a kid, you know, dropping water balloons from the ceiling. Okay, that's juvenile stuff that most kids do something stupid like that. That doesn't make a kid a bad kid. What you want to really know is, what is his background? What is his support system? Where does he develop his values? What type of values does he have? Is he someone that will trust you? Is it someone that will be somebody that you can work with, or he's always going to have an influence in his life that's negative? All those type of things help you determine. You know, for example, you asked about Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf. Well, you knew what Peyton Manning's work ethic was, commitment to football was. Ryan Leaf's, I don't know that anyone thought he would be a complete bust, but Ryan Leaf had some issues. You did not hear about those issues so much in Pullman, Washington, at Washington State, but you did hear about him in his high school in Montana, and those that did their homework were a little bit ahead of the game than others that weren't. It has gotten far more sophisticated in that we interview all these guys with professionals, trained professional psychologists, that will have some very unique questions when it comes to evaluating these players. That I'm not quite sure that I understand all the meanings of the questions, although I learn more and more every year from a psychologist. But what they uncover is unbelievably accurate in terms of how a player's character will likely plan out. I'll give you an example. When I was scouting with the Oilers, the general manager and head coach at the time wanted Lawrence Phillips out of Nebraska. I'd scouted Lawrence Phillips, thought he was a really talented runner, but hadn't done it for a long period. I preferred Eddie George out of Ohio State, but certainly there were some things to like about Lawrence Phillips, the player. There were significant concerns about Lawrence Phillips, the person. When I really began to study and get to know Lawrence, I learned, you know, some troubling things. For example, never knew who his mother or his father was. That's not the kid's fault. He never met his mother or his father. Sad. And you wonder why somebody like that can get screwed up. So he's kind of raised in a gang environment. You know, I'm not making excuses, but think about some of the decisions we might have made if we weren't brought up by good family, or if we didn't have good influences in our life. Can you imagine being raised in a gang environment and all you knew was stealing and drugs? And the unfortunate part was that they really didn't do a good job at Nebraska of helping him. They gave him a scholarship and an opportunity, but he had problems there. And as in a lot of college towns, they cover it up. Well, you develop contacts and you find out there are things that never hit the press at Nebraska that we knew about that he did. So those were concerning. Documented them all, checked into them all. When I asked Lawrence Phillips in a one-on-one interview who's the person he was closest to with, wasn't Tom Osborne, wasn't Charlie McBride, wasn't Frank Solich, it wasn't anybody at Nebraska. It was his brother. Understandable. Family member. Tell me about your brother. Haven't seen my brother for 9 years. He's been in the Los Angeles State Penitentiary. So the person who he's closest to in his life, who he trusted the most, was his brother, a guy he hadn't talked to in 9 years because he was locked up. Sad. It's really sad as we're talking about somebody that is dead now because he continued to go on a bad path and kill somebody in jail and kill himself. It is sad. You wonder if a talent like that with better direction could have been better. I don't know. I kind of believe philosophically that God doesn't make junk, that society tends to ruin people. And if you're in a bad environment and you're not strong enough and you don't have the right direction and you don't know truly what's good from right from wrong, or if you know what's right from wrong, but you don't care because that's your character that you brought up, it's going to be hard to make it. It's going to be hard to make it. Now, you take a guy like that and you put big money in their hands, what's going to happen? Money makes you more of what you are. So off we went to try to convince that this is not the direction we want to go. We had a psychologist that interview him, and the result, I'll sum it up, it was a detailed result. But in the end, the main comment was, when this guy is not under your supervision, he might do pretty well during the season. Got somebody that's on top of him, coaches, people around him, teammates, leading him right in the locker room. Those things, you can manage that. Once the season's over, you can't baby him anymore. They're making money. What is he doing? Psychologist said he's going to go back to California and he's going to be with the gang folks. That's who he trusted the most. That's who he related to the most. And I'd be darned if that's exactly what happened. Well, we didn't take him, thank God. Dick Vermeule and the Rams did. And it was a disaster, as anyone that followed that story, for people who didn't, he got in trouble with the Rams and more trouble, and it was gone, and he got a couple of other opportunities and never made it. Always a problem off the field. Even got an opportunity in the CFL. Same thing happened, and he ended up going to jail. Ended up spending a lot of time in jail. Ended up killing a man in jail. Ended up killing himself in jail. Now, that's a example that is to the extreme, but is one that we go through every day with not as much drama, but with similar situations. I drafted Keith Bullock out of Syracuse. Keith Bullock was a really talented young player, played in the league for a long time. Keith Bullock grew up with foster parents, didn't have a good upbringing himself. Brother was in jail. So you got some similarities, right? Here's the difference. He was raised by a foster family. And the thing that I studied with Keith was, yeah, he had a couple of little dust-ups as a kid, but he had some good guidance in his life that taught him right from wrong and got him to understand that this is the path you need to go and not that path. But Keith had some opportunities to take the wrong path because he had family and friends that were from the other side, the bad side. And he resisted that. So when I looked at his background and history, I thought, studied it, and he got in a big bar fight in Syracuse. People, red flag. Oh, you can't take this guy. Don't just make snap judgments. Do your homework. Don't be lazy as a scout. Studied it. And yeah, he made a mistake. His dumb bar fight happens a lot. Not dismissing it, just saying, is this a pattern of behavior? Well, it wasn't. He had a lot of opportunities to take the wrong step. And he didn't. He did the right things. He made amends. That impressed me. I took a chance on him, played for years. But I also was talked out of taking Randy Moss because of his off-the-field problems, which were significant. We know that he went on to have a great career. You do the best you can. You do a lot of background information. Those things are really important. And when you do that, you've got to be very thorough. I do think that there's a lot of investigative background work that needs to be done as a scout in addition to evaluating. And today, the world has changed. When I was doing it, we ran the drafts as scouts. Now it's a little bit different. Scouts today are more background guys, get the information, get the data, and the more astute football evaluators at the top of the organization basically do the film work and make the decisions on how to stack guys on the board. But you got a real edge when you got good guys that have eyes for talent and have the contacts. Big thing. That's why scouts, for about 5 years, their opinion is really limited. Because if you don't develop relationships, if you don't develop a skill for how to evaluate within the league, you know, just because you watch games on TV doesn't mean you know how to evaluate talent. There's a lot of things that go into it. So the background stuff is really important, and every bit is important to determine the person, the football character, and the personal character. There's a lot of research we do in evaluating a player's football character. Some guys are good guys. They don't get in trouble. But boy, they don't like the weight room. They go to the weight room because they have to. They go run because they have to. They don't really like it. I want guys that love the weight room, that want to lift one more rep than they did yesterday, that wants to get just a bit quicker, just a bit stronger, just get better every day. Those guys get better. I'm going to look at a little bit more film. I want to study this a little bit more. I want to get some extra film of people in the league that play my position that do it the best. I want to see how they do it. Football character is important. Those guys that like it, that love it, that live it, they become good football players. Guys that live off their physical skills can only go so far. So yes, evaluating a player's personal background is really important. I want to get to the games this weekend. Folks, I have looked at this Falcons and Eagles game. And by the way, all these games are going to be broken down inside the film room. So we'll tell you how we see these games playing out. When I look at it and study it, this Falcons team, yes, they're playing better. I worry a little bit about this Eagle team. I think it's going to be a defensive game. A lot of defensive speed on the field, folks. Atlanta can really rush the passer, really play well in space. Where will the Eagles get their success offensively? Going to be very curious to see. From a Falcons standpoint, they're going to have to work the run game. They're going to have to work the screen game. They're going to have to get the ball out of the hands of Matt Ryan quickly. Those edge rushers of the Eagles are as good as any in the league. Going to be pivotal that they protect well and get the ball out quickly and make them pay. Like the Falcons here, I think they're the better team. I just don't know that the Eagles can get enough offense to win a game like this. Saturday night, got the Titans and the Patriots. The chances for the Titans lie with their ability to run the football, control this game at the line of scrimmage. Was hurt significantly with the loss of DeMarco Murray. Having a 1-2 punch with Murray and Henry would have been big. Henry's going to have to carry the load. They're going to have to control the line of scrimmage, keep Brady off the field as much as possible, find a way to get a short field for their offense. It's going to be tough. Don't give the Titans much of a chance, quite frankly. New England's just that much better, that much more experienced. And I think the Titans did a great job against Kansas City, but they were aided by a collapse of the Chiefs. So I don't see this being much of a game. I also don't like the Jaguars' chances against the Steelers. Why? Love their defense. Love the Jags' defense. I think the defense can keep them in the game. I think they're going to have to create short fields for their offense. I think they may even have to score some points out of the kicking game and maybe on defense. But I don't see the Steelers being forced into as many turnovers as they were in this first meeting. like Jacksonville's chances here. I don't like Jacksonville's chances here. I just don't know where Jacksonville's going to get their offense. That's the concern. You can play great defense, and Jacksonville will. I think they'll run the football some against Pittsburgh, but can they do it enough? Can the defense hold up for four quarters? And if they play well for two, three, four quarters, can they score enough points? Can you hold up in four quarters if your offense can't move the football? That's where your defense gets worn out. I like Pittsburgh at home here. The most intriguing, I think the NFC games are the most intriguing. I think the best one could be the Saints and the Vikings. I've studied this ad nauseum. I think it is the best game. It's why it's the last one on the television schedule the weekend. This Minnesota team is a lot better than people realize. They've been good all year long. Steady as she goes. I mean, they're right there with the Patriots in terms of consistency. They've got a better defense. They have got the best defense in football. Their front is outstanding. They've got the best safety in football. They've got good corners. They can make plays in pursuit. They're outstanding with their run fits. They can get after the quarterback. They're good. You better be really good and bring your A game against this Vikings team. Trust me, they're that good. Offensively, offensive line's better than last year, which was disaster with all the injuries. Pretty solid offensive line. Running game's pretty solid. Quarterback Case Keenum is making good decisions. He's got a lot of weapons. They get the ball out of his hands quickly. When you overplay the run, he makes you pay. They've got weapons at receiver. They've got a great tight end in Kyle Rudolph, a great tight end. This is going to be a tough matchup. The Saints are going to have to get off to a quick start. They're going to have to break the rhythm of the Vikings offense somehow. They're going to have to play press coverage, reroute them, create some field position and even points with their defense. And the Saints are going to have to find a way to run the football. They're going to have to, the screen game's going to have to be working, and Breeze is going to have to be outstanding when they need him to. Vikings are a better team, folks. They're at home. I know this. The Saints will have to play their best game of the year. The Saints' performance against Carolina, against Tampa, against a lot of their games down the stretch that they played will not be good enough to beat Minnesota. You can take that to the bank. They will not beat Minnesota playing the way they have. They're going to have to play their best game. They're going to have to run it. They're going to have Breeze be sharp, and the defense is going to have to make some big plays. Saints can beat them, but it's going to have to be a great effort, not a good one, and they're not at home. They're on the road. Loud environment, Minnesota. Not as loud as in New Orleans. Saints don't have that benefit. Saints play so much better at home. It's going to be a tough matchup. I like the Vikings here. The Saints can win it. I think it's going to be the Saints hosts in the NFC Championship game against Atlanta. And we'll talk about it if it happens, but I like the Saints' chances in that game. I think they match up better with Atlanta than they do Minnesota. But we'll get to that if and when it happens. Should be a really good one. Hey, folks, reminder again, we'll break down all these games inside the film room. More detail than I have time to discuss here. Check out our daily college football and NFL notebooks as we break down all the inside information going on around the college and NFL world. We're getting ready. We're beginning our process of film room breakdowns, season recap of every team. We're going to break down every position and grading every player in the league. Get you ready for free agency. Get you ready for the draft. That's what we do here at LandryFootball.com. So check us out. We appreciate you joining us. We'll join you again on Tuesday to break down NFL division playoff matchups and everything else going on around the world of football at LandryFootball.com. So join us for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on Tuesday. Take time to enjoy these football games this weekend, and we'll talk to you then.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.